This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Got no reason for the things I fear, the things that plague me when I see and hear. Dimes a nickel and a nickel's none. I'll throw myself into the Sunday sun. It's on a Sunday when you went insane. You said you're going, but I said I came. I'm throwing oranges in an apple cart. The ties that bind it.
Welcome to Geek and Sassy. Turn off the radio, turn off the light, because Jenny says. Isn't that right, Miranda?
That's great. I love it.
Thank you guys for listening to us again for another week. We appreciate you. We recently got some information about our little podcast that, you know, we thought was pretty exciting. We got some stats about how many people have listened to us and what kind of listenership that we have, and we were really both shocked, I think.
I was. I kind of, like, squealed a little.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a squee moment. So, that's proof that there are people listening to us, and bless your little hearts, and thank you so much.
Right?
For just letting us into little parts of your day, and I hope that it at least makes you laugh, or makes you think, or makes you pick up a comic book, or a TV show or something. Something, a little bit of geekery to make you happy.
Exactly.
Because this show makes me happy. I'm always so excited to talk to you and find out what's going on.
I love our show.
Like, I know, right?
And I'm excited to see, like you talking about the people that listen to us, like the random guy that, Not calling you a rando, sir. I'm just saying it was random because it's not someone that is part of our friends list or even an extended part of our friends list. Mm-hmm. And he messaged us on Twitter and, you know, or tagged us and made a comment. And I was like, wow, like, this is not somebody I went out and told my friends, like, hey, let your friends listen. Or Jenny went out and said, hey, make sure your friends listen. Or our immediate friends told I don't know where this guy came from, but I'm glad he found us. Like,
me too.
I thought it was really cool.
Let's give him something to listen to.
Well, first, can I say we are in double digits?
Episode 10.
10!
I feel like it's momentous for some reason.
I feel like it, because, well, it's double digits. Like, some podcasts never, oh my God, my dog is so mean, and we could get into that later. Like, some podcasts never get to the double digits. You know, they only get to like four or five, and it, for whatever reason, it doesn't work for them. And so I think it's great to say, like, we're rolling up on number 10 here. And
before we know it'll be 100.
I would like it. Yeah, I'm so excited.
With 43 days of content. Because we run long. we're going to kind of modify our streams and reads because, last time we talked about podcasts. So we're kind of going to call it streams, reads, and downloads.
Yeah.
So that way we can kind of interject some of our favorite podcasts. And maybe I could stop saying and so much. But anyway.
I say like a lot, and there's another one that everybody says I say a lot, so it's okay.
Okay, good. Damn it, there I go again. Let's start with streams.
All right, I can do that.
Where are we at? We're at, we haven't discussed the CW show since they've come back from the break, so let's say we're into like 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Starting with Monday nights on Supergirl, we could just kind of discuss several different episodes in one, you know, per each show. Supergirl has been sort of disappointing for me.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't enjoy the Kevin Smith episode very much at all. I haven't enjoyed much of Kara, to be honest with you, has been real off. I have enjoyed the hell out of Mon-El. Oh my God. Wynn is getting a little bit better. And I mean, we could discuss this more thoroughly, but I just mean character wise. I mean, there was some good stuff with John and Megan. But it wasn't until this week's with Mixie.
Yeah, I'm not even going to try. I was just telling Kelly one earlier, and I'm not even going to try to say, because we were both like, mix up. So we're just going to say Mixie.
Mixie, yes. That was the first episode that I've enjoyed since Supergirl's. Well, the Lena Luthor episode was better.
I really liked the Lena Luthor episode, but I really, really liked with Mix. Is it Mix of Plixalit? Anyway, I'm not like, once again. Tried one time. I'm done.
Yeah. Mixie.
Mixie, yeah, but I really liked that one. Maybe it was the girl in me because it was funny and cutesy, and
I thought the same thing.
But I loved it.
Mon-El just makes me a little hot under the collar.
Oh right,
oh my god.
Well, yeah, and Elle watched it with me, and she's not watched maybe one other Supergirl. Yeah, she watched the one before the week before that, and so. When she saw the preview, she goes, "What? Why do you do this to me? Damn you! Why do you do this to me?" So she watched it with me, and every time something would happen, like, against Mon-El, she'd be like, "Oh, no, you didn't, you bitch." And I'm like, "Kara is not a bitch. I'm mad at her, but she's not a bitch."
She's not. Yeah, she had some moments there. She tried to – well, I mean, to me, it was obviously fake when she was like, "We're not meant to be together and we're
– Right. I knew that. You knew that.
I was like, is he buying this? I guess. I mean, it would be devastating. And his little face.
His face killed me.
It broke my heart. But I think that just tells you how you know, really much he is falling for her. Because he was just devastated.
Right.
I didn't think he was being that much of a jerk. I mean, they were both kind of being jerks to each other.
It kind of reminded me of, like, in high school when two boys like the same girl. That's all that I thought. It was not adult. Adult men don't, well, not like that. I mean, there's still a little competition that goes on, but it's not like that.
Right.
Theirs was more like high school. But then I stepped back and I was like, he's an alien. Do we really want to call him Mixie? I mean, he's not. He's an interdimensional imp or whatever they kept calling him. But so I guess he's an alien too. But so they're aliens that really – now they're dealing with these Earth feelings. So it would almost be like we just hit puberty and we're in high school and this is how we're going to handle this.
But if you're – regardless of whether you're an alien or not, you still are going to be you, you know, wherever you are. So – I think it's just the customs of the planet.
Well, the reason I thought that is because he even says to Wynn, he's like, things were much simpler when I was back on Daxum, and what was they said? Just used. sorry.
Where he was basically a douche and a womanizer, maybe.
Right. He said it was easier when things were that way.
Right. But going back to Lena Luthor, where are you at on her character as far as, is she plotting something or is she innocent or?
I think right now it's at the, she could be either.
You don't have an inkling either way?
She has moments where I swing very, and I'm like, nope, she's gonna be a Luthor. And then I have other moments where I'm like, no, she's not, because she's been shown the way. But I really still feel at this point it could go either way.
I'm just gonna call it that she's gonna, I don't mean turn bad, I just mean she has a secret agenda that she's setting up all these, like the chessboard, you know, symbolically at the end of the episode there, moving pieces around and I think she has learned from a very young age how to play the long game, and she could probably play it better than even maybe her mom or Lex.
Right. Because she's not, because she's not completely, like, she's a Luther because her dad, but she's not her daughter. So there is probably some sort of manipulative game that she can play above and beyond what her mother, we'll just say, can.
Which her mother is a piece of work as well. So it's, to me, it's, I do think she's going to end up being a villain, but it's going to be.
It would be really strange for them to not make her one. I will say that.
Yeah.
I will say it would be very odd if she turned out to be like a really good person all around, because she's a Luther, and that's just kind of what you, I don't know.
Watch it now. You sound like James Olsen.
I do, but that's another thing we could get into. No, but I feel like they're leading you up to the fact that she's a Luther. Like, and that's what we've always known, is that the Luthers are bad. But, you know, Lex wasn't always bad. I mean, right. In some of the, you know, earlier stuff, they were still only just friends. Mm-hmm. So it could kind of go either way.
No prediction.
Or maybe it'll be identical.
You're going to be middle of the line on this one.
I am very middle of the line on this one, because I just don't know.
All right, so anything else about Supergirl that you wanted to mention?
Stop trying to make Jimmy the Guardian.
Yeah, the CGI is really bad as well. Stop putting shit in slow motion. Oh, God, it sucks.
I just don't, I don't know. I actually talked to Kelly about this really briefly today and said, you know, they didn't turn Lois into like vigilante super or superhero like, and she's still an adamant part of Superman's team. She, you know, can advocate between the humans and Superman, and she has the power that she does at the paper. So why didn't we just leave Jimmy in like the same position? Like,
maybe it's all just a setup to kill him off.
Oh God. No, I don't think I want that either though. I don't.
Well, shit. No. All right, The Flash. So, The Flash has been pretty good.
I've been happy with all of them.
Yeah.
The Flash. Yeah. Like, all the Flash episodes.
I'm trying to, of course, Harrison Wells is always usually my favorite part of any episode. Especially if there are two Harrison Wells in an episode.
I don't know why I am like you and I love multiple Harrisons. Like, yay, all the Wells, all the Wells.
And I like what the team is doing, like, because to me this is, like, different than from what they're doing maybe on Arrow, which we'll get to, but I like the team. They have these kind of goals. You know, they have this list of events that they know that are going to happen in the future, and they are actively trying to eventually save Iris and change things, and it's a different way than what Barry usually does when he tries to change things.
Yeah.
In a very selfish and maybe not thought out manner. But this time they seem to have a good game plan going, and they're able to actually work the problems. I actually like that with them. The team is so strong right now. Julian is really good now.
Yes, I didn't like him at first. Not in a sense of, I don't want you on the show, but, like, I just didn't, like, he was the bad guy. I didn't care for him. He was mean to, he still has that, like, attitude, but I think it's the only way he knows how to be.
I think so, too. But this, it seemed like this most recent episode when they go to Gorilla City, he was cute. He was actually charming. He had, he had some moments. So I like the growth of his character so far. And he still has a lot to deal with from being under the influence of Savitar.
And he's dealing, you can see he's dealing with that internally. Like,
and
he's trying to,
he's reaching out to try to help Caitlin with her issue as well.
I think he's more than trying to help Caitlin with her issue.
Well, that's true. But that's how they can bond. And Cisco, the episode that was kind of focused on him. I forget the name of it, where he gets to vibe at Vibe Fight. Is that a thing? Mm-hmm. Vibe Fight with what's her face?
Oh, shit.
Yeah, her. But they had some really great chemistry.
And clearly she's going to be brought in, you know, like we may see. I'm figuring we'll see more of her.
I think we probably will. I think next week, looks like Grodd is going to use her to get over to.
Right, she popped in at the end of. Which kind of sucks because I was kind of like, yay, maybe.
I do wish they had
have an interest.
I do wish that they had been able to at least kiss. Like I had like several shows for a couple weeks there where there were all these almost kisses. I'm like, is nobody going to kiss anymore? Come on.
I kind of thought hers was funny though because she was like, no, nope, too late.
It was cute, but still not enough. But at least Barry and Iris get to kiss a lot now.
Yeah, but I'll have to say. Like, we know, obviously, that they live together and things are happening. And I'm not a prude. You guys know that by, like, leaps and bounds now. But I don't know. Their relationship has always been so sweet and innocent that I really didn't like that line he used on her at the end where she was talking about going to bed or whatever. And he's like, well, that or how late they would be up. I don't remember what she
oh,
said.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes, well, that all depends on you. And I was like,
I'm sorry.
I was like,
that's as suave as Barry gets, I think.
And I know, but at the same time, I was like, this is.
Well, they showed them in bed together numerous
right, that's
times.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you know that they obviously have adult times, but, you know, or sexy times, whatever you want to call it, because they live together. They've shown them in the bed together. But, like, it's always so sweet and innocent. Like, a lot of times they kiss on the cheek as they're passing each other, and they hold hands. Like, it's one of those, like, sweet little relationships. And then Barry's like, that all depends on you. And I'm like, oh, I don't know about that, Barry.
So they're just not one of those couples that you feel like is all that sexy. You mostly
right.
think of them as just sweet and cute and.
Right. I guess I don't see them as like the hot damn. Like,
which is terrible because, oh my God.
I know.
She's
like,
super hot.
You have a thing for her
yeah.
and like, oh, he's pretty.
Yeah,
pretty.
He is. He really is.
But now with Kara and Monel were like making out on the couch, I was
yeah.
like, hot damn.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why, but I don't see that. I don't feel that way with ours. I just don't know why.
I do understand your point. I do.
But I love the whole, like, when they're holding hands and when they're kissing. You know, I used to, like, despise them trying to put them together. And then when they finally did, I was like, I think I like this. Oh, that was a sweet kiss. Like, I like this.
But you prefer their things to be kind of implied instead of, like, hot making out on the couch.
Yes.
Okay. Well.
But Monty and Carl, they got all day long.
Yeah, they can.
That is fine with me. And if Felicity ever wants to make out with Ollie again, I'm totally okay with that, too.
Yes, please. Speaking of Arrow,
I love my segue. I'm good at segues.
You are good at segues. Good God. I hate that Susan lady, whatever your name is. You suck.
Now, she is one I was screaming bitch at the TV. I don't like her. Like, she just doesn't fit with the show in general to me.
Why is Ollie trying to get his dick wet with this girl? I do not understand it.
Because he's not over Felicity.
Is
but
it
Felicity's
rebound?
Not right for him, so he's just biding his time.
I mean, otherwise, I think Ollie is making some really good choices over there. He doesn't seem as tortured recently. Even though,
yeah, like he
know,
was in the very beginning of the season.
He is tortured about what happened to Billy or whatever his face. And
well,
being
of course.
Deceived, but he's not. I don't think he truly feels that responsible. He knows he was duped. You know, it's not. It doesn't. I don't feel like it eats at him the way other things
have. I think
have.
It did for like that one episode. He was like really like torn up on it. And then he realized like, no, I'm not, there's no reason for me to be mad at myself. This is Prometheus's fault.
Right.
Like, he knew what he was doing when he did this. I mean, he duct taped a man's mouth shut and, you know, a gun to his hand. Like, he knew what he was doing.
Right.
He caused that.
And this is kinda where, like, some of my feelings about Arrow, and I don't know if any of this makes sense to anybody else, but maybe I'm just really impatient to find out who Prometheus is and to find out that story. But all these episodes that they've been doing, they've been good. I've enjoyed them for the most part. The one when they went to Russia was a little bit rushed, and but it had some good action scenes. It has good flashbacks. Still enjoy the flashbacks. I even enjoy the Bratva stuff. But I just feel like, why are we still doing all this crap when we need to go find out who Prometheus is? What is your plan going forward? I want a plan like they have on Flash. I want them to, you know, they're smart. They figured out shit all the time. Come up with something. Get a lead.
So maybe that's why you want the plan, is because you're watching how well a plan is working on Flash. And we've seen Team Arrow have go forward into things with a plan.
Yes. And now it just feels like we're going off on all these tangents. Not that the tangents are bad. It's just distracting me from what I really want, which is the Prometheus story. Like, I like the new Black Canary. I'm on board with her.
I do like her.
And I'm totally fine finding out more about her. And good God, if I have to let my Olicity go, I will if I have to, but only for Dinah, because I do like her so far.
Okay, I do have a question, and maybe it's just me, but the moments between Diggle and Dinah, they're breaching into an area that I don't want them to go.
Now, I did, like, notice that in the car or the van.
Well, both times in the van, and then again when they're like this week when she was gonna, you know, be sworn in, and he leans over and he's like, "You got this, Jake. Look, you know, kind of giving her like a little," and I feel like. And we're not seeing his wife anymore. Like, we've not seen her in a while. Mm-hmm. Like, we know he loves her, but I'm just, I feel like they're breaching on, they're bordering, crossing a line that I'm not okay with them going across. Man, now, I hope they're not. Like, I hope it's just like a, oh, I'm trying to be a big brother, and it just came across wrong when we did this. Like, it just didn't.
I feel what you mean on that, and I thought it was just me. Like, you're just... You're seeing things, you're imagining, and that's not really what they're doing. I'd be curious to see if anybody else has noticed this sort of thing. And, you know, I do live threads on these things on Facebook, and nobody has mentioned that. So,
I was wondering if that was just me. Because I was like, maybe I'm reading into this wrong. But the way it reads on screen, it just... I don't know. I'm not okay with them, you know, I don't know, eliciting an affair or whatever this could bring about.
I seriously doubt that of Diggle. I just do.
I do, but that's why I don't want them to go there, like the storyline, because...
Maybe she should have more scenes with Ollie than she does with Diggle.
Right, because he's the Arrow, and he's the one that brought her on, and I don't know.
And another kind of distraction for me is, and not that I mind, like I said, I don't necessarily mind what they're doing. It's just, it doesn't feel like, it's not what I want right now. I want friggin' Prometheus. And I guess they're maybe just having to save it till the end of the season, or maybe all of these things are going to connect to Prometheus in some way that I'm just failing to recognize.
I feel like that's what it is. It's all leading up to.
All right. So I will continue to be patient. I still love that show. This past...
Well, it was the first one. Like,
yeah,
it's what got us Flash. Right. It's what got us, you know, Legends. It's what keeps getting us more. Like...
I liked what they did with the gun control type episode.
I do, because I feel like it brought some current things into our world. And it did it in a way where both sides could be heard.
Yes.
You know? Right. I liked that. I did like that.
And I like what they're doing with Wild Dog, to be honest.
I do. That episode where they went back to his origin. Like, you and I, neither one, were huge fans of him. Even seeing him on the Salmon Ladder, I still wasn't. I wasn't a huge fan of him. And then they went through that, and then when he had all his moments, with Lance, mm-hmm. He's very much growing on me, and I like that he's part of this now.
It's surprising, like, I wasn't expecting. It's not quite there yet for me, but it's definitely taken some big steps to getting me to like that character. Another thing about that Susan Williams, she comes into Ollie's office talking about, "Are you the Green Arrow?"
Oh, that was hysterical.
And she's like, Ollie talking about, "Yep, wait, yep. What?"
I know, my heart stopped for a second.
I was like, "What the fuck just happened?"
Right?
And he's like, "Oh, wait, no, wait, huh? What are we talking about again?" And I'm like, "What a fucking moron! What?"
But then he was like, "Oh, I thought we were doing this joking bit."
Nobody bought that. She did not buy that.
She didn't buy it either.
Nobody bought that. And so my other prediction is that Ollie's secret identity will be revealed by the end of the season.
I feel like it wasn't just her that was leading up to this. It was the fact that, I can't think of the acronym for him right now, but the one crew, like the violence, gun control, crime crew. I can't think of their acronyms. That's what they're going to get called. The crime gang. Anyway, the fact that they're after him because of what happened to Billy, and then she has all this information now. And who was that guy that gave her the information? So obviously that guy knows too, mm-hmm. because she said it would make a lot of sense if Oliver is the Arrow. Right. So she said it out loud to that, informant of hers. Mm-hmm. So they've been known to bring in like people that were briefly in an episode, but had like no real thing, and make them a bigger character. So could the informant now be a problem?
I don't know.
So I'm with you though. I think this is leading up to him having to, maybe not to everyone, but to someone or some group that's very important.
Because his name's already been brought up,
before when right. Lance was like trying to throw the book at him right. and was like, "No, I know Oliver Queen is the Arrow. I know Oliver Queen is the Arrow."
So
this has gone back to season one because yeah. I'm actually rewatching the whole series with Elle, and we just finished. I don't remember which episode, but it's closer to the beginning of season one. And I want to say like 5, 6, somewhere in there, and Lance makes the comment, "Sure is funny that you come back and every time something happens, you're
there.
You're in the middle of it. Yep. You're there." This is before he accuses him, but yeah, he's like, "You're there." That's like, so this is something that I think if we want to go back that far, it's been leading up to him having to tell. And if you noticed along the way, he has slowly started to have to tell people.
He has.
I think maybe the DA guy that's been covering up with him, maybe he's going to have to tell him.
I think that at the very least he is. Because right. that guy's awesome. I really like him too.
I like him. I know. I'm like, yeesh.
Oh, and I told
him. Can we see you on a salmon ladder?
Yes, please. But I totally skipped Legends of Tomorrow because I'm used to it being on Thursday, but it's on Tuesday now. After Flash.
That throws me off too, I will say.
I love.
I don't dislike it, yeah, but.
I love being able to watch Legends early. Oh gosh, that show. I don't know how it just slowly just crept its way into my heart, and now that's the thing I'm most excited to watch every week. It's Legends.
Yes, it's season one B-rate fight scenes, but like, I don't know, there were certain parts, you and I have talked about this before, where it was very, like, B-rate.
Yes.
But it did. It, like, it Oh, it's there.
Mick,
oh.
Mick is one of the reasons that has happened. Because yes. He is and a comedic genius.
And he is in the turmoil he's going through right now. Like, this whole thing he's
or
dealing
refusing
with.
To go through.
Right. Get it out of my head!
So you're not caught up on Legends, so you haven't...
No, because, like, the Colonial... And I was really excited about that one!
That was a good one.
I love that shit. Mm-hmm. I really do. I didn't get to watch that one. It, like I said, it recorded whatever happened, and it didn't start until, like, 15 minutes in. Where, actually, it started right at the part where she's like, General Washington, you're in danger. And I'm like, I know this is not the opening. Like, we've got to lead up to why we're here first. So I was disappointed, but I did see the ones before that, which I was very happy with.
So well, you saw the Star Wars one, which was amazing.
I was happy and not happy. I'm not happy that his daughter now knows that she's an aberration.
Why?
Because she was so hurt and upset, and it's almost like he didn't want to have to admit it to himself either.
Well... Like, I think maybe it might have been more hurtful to her to not know because she felt that he was acting weird. And she was like, what is going on? You know, why are you not? I feel like she's a scientist and she seems to be a lot like him. So I feel like in the long run, knowing this and knowing that he still chooses to have a relationship with her if he can, you know, that's kind of even better. In her mind, because she gets the memories of this dad that she knows. Plus, she knows that this dad basically chose her. If that
right.
makes any sense. I kind of like that. It lends itself to some more opportunities down the road, maybe.
I can see that viewpoint. I just still feel deeply. And maybe it's like a personal thing that I won't get into, but...
Yeah, I have a little bit of personal feelings about that as well.
There was like a personal issue that maybe made me kind of go that way.
Mm-hmm. Same.
So,
Sarah is always awesome.
And once again, I really, really like Sarah
yes.
on Legends. And you yes. guys know that Sarah nor Laurel, either one, were people I was fans of on Arrow. Mm-hmm. But I really like her on Legends.
I love how she refuses to say Legion of Doom.
Yes.
She's like, no, I'm not calling them that. That's stupid. there's so much to talk about on Legends, like the Star Wars episode, Rip being the filmmaker guy, just hilarious.
That was hysterical. Ray's like, I don't know you guys. And he's like all a big pansy, and he's like... My God, I was dying.
All of his scenes with Damian Dark and Malcolm Merlyn, even them two just together, that their whole episode, like their side of the Legion of Doom, so good.
I love how the three of them argue like a married couple. I know there's three of them, but have you noticed that, how like they argue like a married couple?
Yes. More Damian and Malcolm to me.
Right.
First slash, but then he has some good ones in there too.
But then Thawne will come in and he does the same thing. Like when they're all three together, they sound like married people arguing. And then when it's just two of them, no matter which two it is, like you said, Damian and Merlyn have it. It's even worse, but they crack me. This is the one time where I'm like, I kind of don't want them to go away.
I know.
Because, like, I don't want them to stop being the bad guys.
I don't either.
End of this season because
I just want them all to
funny.
Still be the bad guys.
Well, they're fun. They're funny, and they're the bad guys that we loved mm-hmm. to hate mm-hmm. or hated that we loved rather mm-hmm. on the other shows that aren't. They're not part of those shows anymore. Like, so we get them here,
yes.
and it makes sense because. The whole like time travel aberration time travel thing, and it can work. We can have them again
forever. Just let them be the villains for all the seasons. I'm good with that.
I'm good with
it.
It
would be so entertaining.
Or maybe them be the reason why this newest villain is there.
Maybe so.
That would be cool.
And you haven't seen those last two episodes, too?
No, because...
Yeah, the Camelot one and the Colonial one.
Right.
But they do something interesting with Rip that is...
Well, I see what they're leading up to, obviously, because they threw him there, you know. Mm-hmm. That's why they... I know already why they're going to the Colonial time period, you know, they're going to the George Washington thing, because it shows it at the end of the episode before then. And I was like, all I got to say is, Rip is back, and I'm okay. Like, I'd rather him be back on the ship with them, but he's back. So
right. That's cool. And he looks amazing.
I didn't like how he looked in the Star Wars episode.
No, not in the Star Wars episode, but like the Colonial episode.
Oof. Oh, yeah, I saw bits and pieces, obviously, and I was like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. More on that later. So that's all of CW, unless there's anything else you'd like to say.
There is more on CW that I think you would rather not talk about, though.
You're going to make me talk about it.
No, I'm not going to make you talk about it. You gave your... Because I made you last time tell me how you felt about it.
True.
And so I won't talk very long. I will say as far as Riverdale, I didn't even say that. So Riverdale, when you told me like episode one and you felt like it dragged on, or there was parts that dragged on, there was parts that were really rushed. And I asked you, did you think they did that on purpose? And I asked you something else. And I will agree with you on chunks of episode one in the sense that there was no real storyline. Mm-hmm. It was like they were trying to introduce everybody in town. Mm-hmm. There was no real backstory. Like, you got this narrator that you're like, what the crap is going on? Mm-hmm. Who is this narrator? Like, so I kind of agreed, but I was intrigued enough to want to watch episode two.
Okay.
So I did. And, you know, I tweeted you guys after I finished episode two, and I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it. Mm-hmm. So I watched three, and I was like, okay, I'm still with you. And then four is when I was like, whoa, I think I like this.
Okay. So I can comment on four. I did not watch two or three, but I did try to watch four last night.
And then I watched, was last night five or
well,
four?
Whatever last night was the one I tried to watch.
Okay, so the one before that, maybe.
Okay.
Was the one where I was like, oh, I okay. like it. Okay. And made me watch last night. So
what is it that you're enjoying about the show?
Someone said to me it's not that they don't like it, but it's creepy. And I think that's why I like it. It's creep-tastic. Like, and not in a, like, creep-you-out way. It's just weird. It's creepy weird. And I like that. But I like things like that. I'm now starting to see where when they initially presented the show to us, they were saying Twin Peakish. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to see that finally. I find myself wanting more story from specific characters, and each episode that I'm like, they're not going to give me any more, and then the next one they do.
Mm-hmm. Which character in particular do you
mean? I really want more Jug.
No.
Jughead.
Okay.
And I'm getting a little bit more, and Betty maybe cray cray.
Mm-hmm.
Like, straight up, I respect that cray cray though. But I like it.
And so, just a, go ahead.
Yeah, I like the relationship between Veronica and her mom. I really do. Because
her
not
mom,
the
one that's working in the diner.
Yes.
Okay.
But it's not because of their backstory and their background. You wouldn't expect them to have a relationship like that, because it's the complete opposite of Betty and her mom.
Her mom, yeah.
Who, yeah, they have money, but they're not, like, the richest. And, you know, they've always lived in this small town. You would expect them to be the Leave It to Beaver family because of how perfect she is. So, like, initially you would expect her and her mom to be real close. And her be one of those, like, well, I tell my mom everything. And she's not. Like, that's when you find out she's not. Her mom's a straight up bitch. like, I have no other word for her.
Well, I could tell that in the first episode.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you can, but, like, you would just expect how they start presenting every family initially that, you know, she would be, or she would be the one that come around and is like, I'm sorry, and I'm your mom, and I love you.
Do you think she's the murderer?
I don't think it's her.
Do you have a theory?
A couple, because, you know, now that they've come out and said, you know, he obviously his body has been found and he was shot, but not only was he shot, he was tortured. So I have a couple of different possibilities.
Okay.
And I know they're leading up to next week. They want you to think it's Betty's dad. I think that would be too obvious.
Hmm.
I think it would be way too obvious.
Do you, the one character that I think is pretty much like making it too much for me is the redheaded evil sister, twin.
Yeah, thank you for saying that, because if that's not what is going on here, they really need to shift gears, because they are making it look like there's some incestuousness between them two.
And, you know, maybe they're just picking up on some Game of Thrones stuff, but...
I don't know. I've also never been a twin, so...
So you're saying there might be some validity to the idea?
Well, I know that they say twins have a deeper connection than just siblings, and you can't understand it unless you're a twin.
Right.
So if they're trying to force that across, then of course it's going to make it look kind of disgusting, creepy.
Hmm.
Like if you're trying to like really force, but they had such a connection. They had such a, you know, if you force that enough, it would look really incestuous.
Well, she seems to sell it that way. That's part of...
Right, but that's what I'm saying. I don't know what they're getting at with those two, but they're creepy and really creepy. They're part of what makes me, like, as much as she's over the top, that's part of what makes me keep watching the show, because I want to know what the crap is up with the creepy twins.
Well, that's a valid thing. Like, when you find that out, let me know, because I would be interested in knowing that. And I'm not going to watch it.
It's fine. I definitely can see, and I told someone else this, I can pretty much see where this is going to be one of those to each his own shows, not just mm-hmm. episodes. Well, maybe even per episode, but shows. It is going to be one of those that it's not for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It may or may not get picked up for a second season. Apparently, it's catching on really well with the younger crowd, so it may go longer.
Oh, I would not be surprised if it went 15 seasons.
I don't know about that.
Hashtag Supernatural.
Hashtag keep on going. Each episode, the storyline and the story building is a little bit better.
Okay.
So I'm wondering if maybe they just couldn't find their footing, or were trying to rush things, or wanted to get so much information to you in 1, 2, and maybe even part of 3 that they failed to put out a great product. They did an okay-ish product. Because, okay, like I said, 1, 2, and 3, I was like, I don't hate it, but I don't love it. And then I got 4. Yeah, I think it's 4 and 5. I was like, oh, okay, okay, okay. And I need to know more about that teacher. I need to know more.
Well, I think that's fair, and it kind of is how I feel about a couple of other shows, new shows that have started recently. One being Powerless on NBC, which
I still haven't watched it.
I've seen the first 3 episodes, and I was like you. You know, the first one I did not enjoy at all, but I was like, you know, they're short, and
right.
It's not going to kill me if it sucks. I can just see what happens. The second one got better. I really like Alan Tudyk. I enjoy his type of humor. I enjoy office sitcom setting, which is what this is. It's set in the Batman world, kind of. Still not that great on episode 2. But then episode 3 was genuinely funny. It had some really cool, like, Atlantis/Aquaman jokes that were funny, even to me, who I don't know much about Aquaman, but it had a kind of a subplot that was really funny about a couple of people in the office thought that one of their coworkers was a superhero in disguise. So they would,
I saw the preview for that.
They would set up these scenarios to try to get him to go save people. And the one chick thought he was really hot. So she kept trying to, yeah, it was, that whole thing was funny and a really good subplot to the episode. So I'm still meh on Vanessa Hudgens. She's just way too fucking cheerful for me. And she's just too like, giddy up, guys! Blah, blah,
but that's kind of how she is in, like, everything I've ever seen her be in, though.
Yeah, I just, it's grating on me. I much prefer Alan Tudyk's secretary's kind of sarcastic, dry wit. I think she's kind of perfectly placed in that office setting because she has to deal with his craziness. And he's really great at being crazy. He truly excels at that. So I'm going to watch another episode, and kind of like you in Riverdale, I'm going to see if it can continue to build. If they have another couple of week episodes, maybe not so much.
Okay.
Another show that is similar to this, but on a different level, as far as my feelings about it, is Legion on FX. I think it's on FX.
Yeah, it's on FX.
And I wish I had adequate words to describe how freaking weird the show is. I feel like I'm on acid the whole time I'm watching it. Which is good and bad. I mean, it's because they will do some really interesting visual things. And then they will do some really fucking crazy visual. And I'm like, what is happening right now? I told John at the end of last night, I was like, every time at the end of the episode, I'm like, what just happened? And I feel like, because I've seen three episodes now, the first one just had the most weirdness. But a good ending. So I watched the second one. Was better, a little less weirdness, a little more actual story. And some plot. And also looked very cool. And then the third one that I saw last night, it still went a little bit weird, but in a more interesting way. Like, it's so hard to describe it because the premise is he's a mutant with all these really, like, extreme powers, but they think he's mentally ill. So he's been treated for schizophrenia, and he believes himself he has schizophrenia because there are just no other ways to describe what happens to him as far as his abilities, telekinesis, mind reading, things like that. So he's been medicated. He's been a junkie. He's been in therapy. He's been in this facility, and he truly believes he has this mental illness, and then somebody comes along and tells him, no, you have powers. That's just a very interesting story to me. And it can hit on the mental health aspect of things. Because I think he has some sort of combination. Like, he has these abilities, but he's also crazy.
Well, I would love to be told I'm not crazy. You have
abilities. I know. I thought the same thing. I'm like, but there are all these other forces at work that we just don't understand. And it comes out in all these really weird ways. The third episode had a little a bit of an Inception vibe. Because they like travel back in his memory. And it's, like I said, just watch it if you can. It's weird. But it's not
bad. I had plans to, but it was one that I thought about waiting and letting all of the episodes come out. And then, because, you know, during the summer, you're like, oh, what am I going to watch? So I thought about letting them all come out and then watch it this
summer. Might be a better way. It might be just one of those bingeable shows.
I really like binging shows.
Works a lot better.
I don't want regular TV to go, like, kaput. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I really dig this whole, like, I can binge it all at once thing. Yeah.
Especially on shows like that, which, you know, I tend to want to Facebook and Twitter and, like, I'm on my phone a lot of the times when I'm watching TV, which I probably shouldn't be, but I multitask, and that
show... I do, too. I play on my phone or my iPad a lot, you know.
That show, I can't really do that, because if I'm not paying attention, I will not know what the hell is happening.
Oh, I told someone that last night about Stranger Things. I was like, stop! Pay attention!
Yeah.
You can't miss anything in Stranger Things.
No. Okay. So, is that all we have on shows?
Yeah. Because that's really all... I've just been trying to catch up on everything. Okay. And I'm trying to catch up on, I don't think you even watch anymore, so...
Okay. Do you want to talk about downloads or reads?
Let's do downloads last.
Okay.
Just because of how we had decided to do it. Let's do reads.
I have lots of reads, so...
Why don't you go first on reads, then?
I have lots. Okay. So, I mentioned last time that I had been reading a bunch of Green Lantern trade paperbacks, including... Tales of the Sinestro Corps, The Sinestro Corps War, Volume 2, Green Lantern's Secret Origin, Rage of the Red Lanterns, and Sins of the Star Sapphire. All of these by Geoff Johns, with a bunch of different artists who are amazing. Ron Mars, Ivan Rice, Peter Tomasi, Patrick Gleason... Ethan Van Sciver, Dave Gibbon. The Hard Traveling Fanboys have recently done an episode on Sinestro Corps War, and they said everything better than I could say. I'm so glad that I read this. I think that I've not read a lot of classic type stories. I would say before I started all of this Green Lantern reading, I would say the character I've read most about would be Batman. So I feel like just these books have really increased my knowledge and my absolute love of Green Lantern, especially the concept of the core and not just Green Lantern, Hal or John or Kyle or Guy, which... also did increase my love of those individual characters throughout these stories, and then have also given me a lot of things that have connected to the greater DC universe, like especially in the Sinestro Corps War with Superman Prime / Superboy Prime, and the particularly the villains. I'm not going to say this very eloquently, but the ideas that Geoff Johns have about the spectrum of colors relating to emotions, I think that's just genius. I think that it speaks to me in some weird way. Like, even though I love Green Lantern, I feel like, you know, you kind of do this thing where... which lantern would I be? You kind of have a whole thing now to choose from. And it's... according to a BuzzFeed quiz, I'm a Green Lantern. But...
I like, though, that you're saying that rereading or reading all of these is not only connecting you to characters that have their own story arcs, and not just the world of Green Lantern, but the universe... it's within as a whole. Right. I really like that.
And it also, I think that Green Lantern has such a rich history in and of itself, too, that it's still fascinating to learn just Green Lantern stuff, and then it's even better to see how it connects in with other parts of the universe. The artwork in these books are amazing. Like, since I read Green Lantern Rebirth, that trade paperback, which is basically what started me on this Green Lantern thing, I've been an Ethan Van Sciver fan. Like, I love the way he draws Hal. I love the way he draws Sinestro, Batman even. And Ivan Reis was trying to steal my heart because his stuff is so good. I just totally fell in love with his art. And that was another thing that I appreciate about these trade paperbacks is the different artist takes on the characters. Of course, there's another book that I'll talk about later, which will steal my heart back. Ethan Van Sciver will steal my heart back from Ivan Reis. But I don't know how much Green Lantern... Have you ever read Sinestro Corps War or Blackest Night or any of this?
I haven't. Green Lantern is one of those, like, I've watched an animated series I really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. The movie that we all won't talk about. Mm-hmm. And I think I've picked up, like, one book 4 or 5 years ago. Like, it's an older book. It's not that I don't find it appealing. It's just not a book series I'm like, I'm going to sit down and read those. I don't know why. I just never have been that way with those.
I would highly recommend it, especially, I mean, Geoff Johns is amazing. He really is. As far as single issues, I have a couple of weeks worth. I won't, like, go too crazy about all of these, but since we are talking about Green Lantern, I have to talk about Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 15 with Robert Venditti as the writer and Ethan Van Sciver. Oh my god. I describe this book as panty dropping. Because, oh my god, it looks amazing. And the art, you know, the art is, I think, is Sandoval has been the one that's been drawing a lot of these on this arc. And it's been good. I mean, I've been impressed with it. But there's just something that EVS does that it just, it's what I like. Every page looks amazing. There's nothing that I don't love. And it's kind of like we mentioned last time, I kept thinking, like, this will be my... Which I haven't even picked a panel of the week. Because I can't. It's just this whole book. It's so beautiful. I wish I could explain it. You need to look at it.
They need to read it. Like, that's the way to, like...
Just go read. It's
the whole book. Yeah, tell them. Just read the whole thing.
Just read it. Guy Gardner is amazing. I love him. I just do. And the story is really good. They're doing very interesting things with the Green Lantern Corps and the Yellow Lantern Corps. And, but Hal and Kyle and Guy are trying to go off and do their own things. And Jon Stewart is trying to put these two cores together, and he's having trouble. You know, he's like, the guys are not listening to me, and this is not going to work for me. So I'm interested to see how that works out when Jon Stewart gets a hold of the boys when they get back, especially Guy. And gotcha. Then another a new series that I've talked about that was coming up this month, Batwoman Rebirth. Like I said, I need this book. I need a origin story for her because I didn't know her origin, and it's told really well in Batwoman Rebirth number one. It gives you kind of a cross section of her life at different ages, and gives you the story of her twin sister, her mother, her early days when she's in the military and she gets kicked out for basically having a relationship with another person, another lady in particular, and because Batwoman is lesbian. So there's a heavy focus on her relationships in this book. And I think it's a way to kind of set up her mindset and like the things that she's gone through and how she's going to handle them going forward, because she seems to be someone who doesn't like to stick around that much.
Okay.
So it seems like she's had a string of relationships with women that have not gone particularly well. And then eventually she kind of seems to find her place as Batwoman. And then they've kind of set up what her book's going to be going forward. All extremely interesting to me and extremely gorgeous. Another extremely gorgeous book this week that, like I said, every page just has something amazing on it. And if even as simple, and I'm kind of, and this is weird, I'm weird, but have you seen any of the images of Batwoman, the Rebirth? Have you seen any of the pages covers?
I wanted to get it. I just haven't seen anything or gotten it yet.
She has such a striking look, and it's very distinctive, and I know this is going to sound what it's going to sound like, but I don't care. There's something about the way her mouth is drawn, and that sounds weird, but it's...
No, because there was one, and I don't know which one it was, but it was the eyes from... The way the eyes were positioned near the nose, and it, like, I couldn't get over it, so no.
Well, I mean this in a very appealing way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's... There's something about her lips. I don't know. Whatever that's going to sound like, I don't know. But I think it's a very striking look for her. And I'm so ready to keep reading this book. I really, really liked it. Another one that was new was Super Sons Rebirth,
yes.
Number one. Did you read this?
I didn't read it, but I bought it. I didn't read it because of the comic book I read is a full volume, so okay. I just didn't get to it. Yeah.
I think that Kaden would like this.
Well, I got it, so I'm going to see how he feels about it.
I tend to love Damian Wayne, which I've said before, and he does another real classic Damian thing. It's really funny and obnoxious. A lot of stuff goes on here. They deal with some bullies. John's still dealing with how to really handle stuff like that because he's very powerful. And he knows he can't just beat up on the bullies. Funny stuff with Damian and Alfred. The art's really good. I really enjoy seeing how much the boys reflect their fathers. It's obvious, but it's also kind of a fresh spin on Batman and Superman, in my mind. Let's see. I have Nightwing, Green Lanterns, Wonder Woman, Green Arrow, and Batman that are all really good. There wasn't anything here that I didn't like. So I don't want to like jaw on about all these, but particularly the Green Lanterns, when they were backing up the Batman, that was part of that storyline where they were in Gotham with Batman, and they do an interesting thing with some of the Sinestro Corps kind of story, and they do an interesting thing with Alfred. It's called Darkest Nights Part 2.
Nice.
And it looks really good too. So go read all of those if you're not already reading those. They are all good. What have you got?
So I finished two books. Actually, I think I finished three books. I forgot to write one down. So one of them I read was it's a Doctor Who book, novel, whatever you want to call it. And it's 12 Doctors, 12 Stories.
Cool.
So it's 12 full stories, one for each Doctor, to include the current, obviously. Mm-hmm. And each story is written by somebody different. And all of them are well-known authors. Like, one is the guy that wrote the Artemis Fowl series. I want to say the Margaret Stoll lady that I got all excited about last time. Mm-hmm. I want to say she wrote one. Let's see. I'm trying to find it while I talk. And for some reason, I can't multitask like I normally can. So, yeah, like the one, Owen Cole, he has a funny name. It's like Owen. Anyway, the guy that did the Artemis Fowl series, Neil Gaiman writes one. Holly Black writes one. Rachel Mead. All very well known. Philip Reeve. I mean, all of them were very good. The first few Doctors, and yes, I have watched all of Doctor Who, like to include the original. The first stories about like Doctor 1, 2, and 3 were well written, but just okay, if that makes sense. Because I didn't find a connection to the. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like, yeah, that makes sense.
I just quickly watched through those Doctors, and that was a rewatch because when I originally watched them, I was like super young and really didn't pay attention. So I don't have a real connection. I felt myself once we got to like 9, 10, 11, 12, like really into the stories. And I wonder if that's because that's more of where my love of Doctor Who started.
I would say that would definitely be fair.
Then. But they're really good. I thought it was a great read. I did a story here and there. I did do it on audio. So I did like a story here because even one story, I want to say, like, can be 45 minutes to an hour. You know,
good.
Yeah. Hmm. It was a significant amount of time for some of these stories. And then I reread the first Harry Potter because I've decided to completely reread the series, which,
awesome.
Yes, I understand. I've already read these like all 4 and 5 times, but I've never done it in complete order like this, like where I'm actually starting at one, I may read a book or two in between and then go into two, mm-hmm. and then like continuously. I've always been like, oh, let me pick up four just because I want to, or
yeah.
let me pick up this just because I want to. I've read them all multiple times, but mm-hmm. I've never, yeah, like this. And then I read a Star Wars book, and I always say her name wrong, even though it's said all the time. But I did the Akosha one.
Oh, yeah?
Ahsoka, Akosha.
Ahsoka,
everybody says,
Ahsoka,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's like I've heard one narrator say it one way, and then other. It's supposed to be Ahsoka, but I've heard it like, I don't know. Anyway. But I read the Akosha story, and it's really good. And it's one of those, like the Star Wars story that you did on Audible, where it has sound effects.
Oh, cool. Doesn't it sound awesome?
It did, and it wasn't like a full-on narrated work like some of the Neil Gaiman books mm-hmm. have been done, which I did enjoy those too. But it was just like sound effects, and I think it was like to have a certain like song or like set of noises that you definitely know are Star Wars noises to come in at like specific times as the narrator was reading certain parts.
Yes.
It just was really awesome. And it was read or narrated by Ashley Eckstein, which she is the head and the founder of Her Universe. And this is her favorite. Like, if you ask her, because I read in an interview once, her favorite, like, name off the top of your head, all time, geek girl, like, what's your favorite? And this is her character.
Okay.
So to have her narrate this story, I thought added an extra layer that, I mean, people may not know who she is, but to me, because I did know who she was in the backstory and her, you know, her geek fandom likes and loves, that I thought it added like an extra layer of
that. That is really cool.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool that they got her to do that. I really enjoyed that story a lot. I would say if you do it, if you're somebody that can do audiobook, to do any of those Star Wars stories in audiobook, because from what I understand, all of the newer ones at least have the sound effects to go with.
I would agree with that.
So that's what I would say to do.
Awesome.
And then my comic for this time, I actually did volume one of the Scooby-Doo Apocalypse.
How did that go?
I love this, which I had read book one when it came out and then didn't pick up any more of it because I wasn't sure. It was not that I wasn't sure how I felt. I just wasn't sure at the time. I had a lot on my pull list. And I was like, I'm going to wait until they have the full thing out. So I did. And I like that I can just flip and go on to the next, you know, the next page, the next story. Mm-hmm. The only criticism I really had about it, and I can't remember what Russell was talking about, but I want to say when Russell was a guest on our show, we talked about maybe panels where they talk too much.
That sounds familiar.
So I was thinking about that when I was reading parts of this book, because they're trying to get a lot of information to you, especially initially. Mm-hmm. And so the talk bubbles, I'm like, wow, this is so much reading. And I know you're reading. I get that. Yeah, but it's a comic. So
I understand.
I'd like to be able to enjoy the visuals.
Right.
Or, you know, have the visuals play a little bit more into the reading. And there was a lot of
exposition, I think it might be called.
Yes, I think it's – I wanted to say that, but I was like, I'm going to look like a fool if I ain't right. So I'm just going to call it talkie-talkie.
Yep.
Lord.
So, yeah, they did. It was
– it's very well written, though, and I left my book in the other room, so I was trying to, like, look up who that was.
That wrote it?
That wrote it. I want to say it was a team effort, which on most books it is often, mm-hmm. you know, full team. A little bit faster here, Internet. Okay.
So the premise of it is basically the Scooby gang in Apocalypse?
Yes. Okay. And no. So
is it like zombie
they
apocalypse?
They start out, like, they don't actually all know each other. Velma kind of knows Shaggy. Fred and Daphne do know each other. And, like, when the first few pages, they all meet each other.
So it's kind of like an origin story for them as well?
Yeah, kind of like a new twist on origin story. They're obviously older because Daphne has this show that apparently something happened and things didn't go so well. Fred's her cameraman. So now she only comes on, like, it only comes on late night on the Knitting Channel.
There's a Knitting Channel?
But she's
channel?
Still, her thing is, well, I'm still on the air. You know, mm-hmm. like, at least still on the air. And Velma is a, like, top head researcher at this unknown of facility where Shaggy actually works. But Shaggy works in a part that he doesn't know any of this other stuff that Velma does because he thinks he's just training dogs, which is how Scooby-Doo is part of it. Mm-hmm. He thinks he's just a dog trainer and that's all they do is government research on how to get – there's this little thing that Scooby wears on his head. It's like a – I don't know. It's like this visor thing and it allows you to like communicate and understand the feelings and the emotions and they can – that's why Scooby can talk. You know, okay. He's always been able to talk before.
Right, right.
And he can again, and that's why he can is because this government research thing. So Shaggy thinks that that's all this company that Velma and he work for does is government research for trying to make dogs so they can have them as soldiers. Mm-hmm. Part of the, you know.
Ah.
And he takes on Scooby because when he gets there, things didn't go right with Scooby and all the other dogs are about to eat him basically and beat up on him. And he's like, stop! And he can like actually make the other dogs leave him alone. And so he's like, no, I guarantee you I can make this work, you know? And so he kind of takes Scooby under his wing.
Well, that is actually interesting.
It is, but the whole, like, the beginning doesn't ruin anything, is that the part that Shaggy doesn't know about that Velma works for, and she's one of the heads of, is they've basically developed this virus that will, I don't remember who it chooses to, it tells you, and I can't believe I can't remember this, I should have wrote it down, like, if it's released, her and all her fellow doctors would be sealed in this room. They would be fine, and then it would infect and get rid of certain people. Like, like it's specifically made and created to get rid of certain people.
Certain people.
I don't remember. Well, they have to have some sort of traits or something. I don't remember what it is right now.
So that is the catalyst for the
right,
apocalypse.
The catalyst. And somehow she's decided – her and the fellow scientists got into this big argument, and she doesn't agree with how they want to do it. She doesn't agree with this. This is not what they originally created it for. It was supposed to be for a different purpose. And so she seeks out Daphne because she wants to, on Daphne's mystery show,
go public.
She wants to release this. Yeah, she wants to release this information. And as she's trying to show this stuff to Daphne, and then Shaggy and Scooby get accidentally included because Shaggy has snuck Scooby out for the day to take him to this, like, little weird festival that just so happens is also where Fred and Daphne are at meeting with Velma.
Okay. I'm kind of digging this.
Yeah. So, and because of Scooby-Doo's helmet thing is how he, like, locks on and realizes that Velma is close. So that's how they all end up intertangled down in this bottom part of this facility that he's, like, he's telling everybody at first, Shaggy's like, she's crazy. She doesn't know what she's talking about. All we do is train dogs. We develop equipment for dogs. And she's like, yeah, Mr. She basically keeps cracking jokes. And she's like she's kind of like a badass bitch in this one. You know, Velma's always been timid. And she's like calling him stupid and basically telling him he doesn't know because he's not privy to information. And, wow. And they get down there and he realizes, oh shit, she's telling the truth. And something happens while they're down in this bunker where her and her fellow scientist would be sealed, and it's released.
Oh.
And they're like, did you do that? And she's like, no, I'm standing right here talking to you. Why would I do that if I wanted it not to be done? And I'm trying to get it out on your show. So that's where it kind of all starts you off. And then, you know, you're like, what the hell? And then you got the whole rest of the book. And there's little origin stories in between. Like, what I thought was real cute is then they go into telling you, like I said, how Shaggy and Scooby end up together.
I'm going to have to read this.
It was a very good book. It was written by Keith Giffen and Jim Lee.
Oh, sweet.
It's a very good book. Like, book one, even if you were just to get book one, it's 32 pages, I think. I got the whole volume, not just book one.
All right.
But it's really good. I'm really enjoying it.
Is that all you have for reads?
Yeah. I'm still working on a few things. I have a couple books I'm reading to write reviews about, which I promised both authors that when I finished them, I would make sure they were in my read section. Just not that all they did is gave me a free book and said to review it. So no, I'm not getting compensation here, guys. But I mean, it's a nice way. It's a different way. Most people think, oh, just post my review here. Mm-hmm. But I thought for myself and how you and I do this show, since we talk about books, it would make more sense and maybe reach a different audience. So I got a couple that will be coming that you can't even buy yet.
All right. That's kind of exciting. That's like an exclusive take.
I thought so.
All right. That'll be on our next show then.
Yeah, it will.
Well, what about downloads? What have you been listening to?
So I have a friend who is known as the Yard Sale Artist. And if you guys have ever been to Fanaticon, DragonCon, I think he even goes to PenceCon. He's local to the area here. But if you've been to any of those, you've probably met him. He's the Yard Sale Artist, Jared Albrick. And he has co-starred, co-hosted on a couple of podcasts I didn't know he had, but he has recently started his own, and he popped episode one up there, and I was like, great, I'll take a listen. And the concept is really freaking cool. So his podcast is Comics with Normies,
as
in normal people.
I like it.
Right. And so what he does every episode, he randomly picks a comic. Usually he finds them, for example, you know, I said he's the yard sale artist. What that means is he goes around and scraps, or like example, I have a giant box of craft supplies I'm never going to get to. So I said, hey, Jared, do you want them? So he gathers things from people, yard sales. You know how you go to yard sales and you see somebody selling a whole bucket of crayons for like a dollar, and mm-hmm. you're like, why would I buy that? Mm-hmm. He buys them and he uses them in his art, or like pieces of wood thrown beside the wood, beside the road, pieces of metal. So that's where he got his name. But in that, he comes across comics sometimes. Sometimes people don't know what they have and they're just getting rid of it. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes they just don't care anymore and they're not real important. Like, they're cool to somebody, but they're not, you know, like, mm-hmm. you know. So he'll grab them. And in the very first episode, he grabs a Spider-Man comic that's during the middle of the Spider-Man clone saga of mm-hmm. the 90s. Mm-hmm. And he has a lady that actually works out with him and my husband where they work. And she's aware of what comics are. She had read, she said, I think she says maybe a couple, like a long time ago, but they're not something she reads. So he had her read it and then they discussed it.
That is a very interesting idea.
I know. I thought it was an amazing concept because it's not like, and I think the shows that we all have here on Place to Be Nation, where we all take turns discussing comics or talking about our favorite comic of the week or whatever we do, I find that great. And I also find that fascinating. But this is such a different and fresh take that I have never seen done. And if it has been done and you listen to another podcast like that, please let me know. But I've never heard of this before. And I thought, what a better way to get people interested in comics or shows or whatever it is by literally saying, hey, I think you should check this out, and then let's talk about it.
I love that idea.
And I thought it was great. And she even, you know, she talks about, and for somebody that doesn't read comics, she was saying things like I hear from you where I'm like, she's like, the art on this page and the, you know, the wording, and she even spout, like, she really genuinely cared to do this with him because she even like quotes and she's like when he says this. So it was kind of neat to see somebody that had no background in comics get excited over it and talk about it. And
I think that's amazing. And I'm definitely listening to this. Where can I find it at?
So I listened through iTunes. So when he told me the name of his podcast, I just went to iTunes and searched it. I also want to say it's on Podbean, but I will say, if you're familiar with us here at Geek and Sassy, obviously, because you're listening to us, you are. But if you're familiar with the way it works, obviously, you go under Place to Be Nation Pop, and then you find Geek and Sassy. He's kind of the same way. He's under – I'd never heard of them either, and I've not listened to anything else of theirs, but it's the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
White Rocket.
Yes. So I'm sure you could look them up. He is on Twitter as well, Comics with Normies. Okay. So they can find him there and then go from there. But it was a great – I really liked it. And he posted a picture a day or two after episode one aired, and it was the first compendium to Walking Dead. And he's like, yes, I found somebody to read the compendium. And I was like, wow, that is freaking awesome. So episode two is – been recorded, I know, and it was not the compendium, but he has, for a future episode coming up, he's got someone reading compendium one, and then they're going to discuss it.
That's awesome.
I think is amazing, because that is not just saying, hey, you've never read comics, will you check out this issue? Like,
yeah.
That's like a tome. That's like, yeah, as big as, like,
I'm looking at it right now. I mean, that's obviously a good friend who's going to, yeah, sit down and read that. Of course, I like that book, but
I've read a huge chunk of that book. That's why when people are like, I thought you were a Walking Dead fan, I was like, I've read all of, like, most all. No, I did finish all of Compendium 1. It was two that I've not finished. Mm-hmm. So it's not that I'm not a fan, guys. It's just a different kind of fan. But yeah, I thought this it's such an amazing concept that it has to be shared with the likes of everyone.
I'm definitely going to listen to it.
He would love that.
Pretty much, I listen to a lot. But what I wanted to mention today was probably one of my first podcasts that I absolutely loved. And I discovered this right around Halloween, not last year, but the year before. And it's called the No Sleep Podcast.
I think I just added them to my list.
Okay. Most people are familiar with No Sleep from their Reddit. They have a Reddit page that is basically horror stories or fiction or nonfiction, if you choose to believe that they're real, which some of the things I do choose to believe are real. There are some stories in there that I'm like, that sounds real to me. So the No Sleep Pod, I want to say they're on season 9, maybe. At the beginning, they...
Is it just No Sleep? Or...
Yeah, it's the No Sleep Podcast.
The No Sleep, okay.
The very beginning, they would have episodes, like all of the... What they do is it's audio, fiction, audio, horror. So they have... Okay. Like narrators, they have voice actors, they have music. It's a full production, with sometimes just a narrator, like one person reading the story. Sometimes they have different points of view. They have, several voice actors doing the story, just depending on what the story is. But they pick their stories from, the No Sleep Reddit, and they have, by now, I mean, it's been years that it's been on, but by now they have, like, a pretty good stock of, like, really good voice actors and authors that are very consistent on their quality. And, of course, the very first episode has one of my favorite stories that I've listened to for them forever. Like, I've listened to every story that they have that is free. Okay, that is the caveat, okay. Because once they hit about, I want to say season 3 or 4 is when they started doing, you pay a subscription. I think it's $20 for the season. So let's say if they produce 5 stories for one podcast, if you listen to the free version, you might get 2 or 3 stories. But if you're a subscriber, then you'll get all those stories. And then you also get additional extra bonus content if you are a subscriber. I have not yet subscribed, so all that I've listened to have been the free episodes, which is still a good amount of content because they come out weekly.
Okay.
But it's horror based. It's it has a lot of trigger warnings. I mean, now if you're sensitive to any type of violence or mature content, then it's not going to be for you. But I like the creepy, I like the scary, I like psychologically, yes, fucked up. We'll just say it that way.
I know it sounds bad, but I do.
And it runs the gamut. I mean, you never know what kind of story you're going to get. But it's very well done. Just a few of my favorites. Like I said, the very first episode of No Sleep, the first story, and I can't believe I don't remember what it's called, but that is my absolute favorite story of theirs. They have an amazing story called The Whistlers, maybe around like season 5. One of the best things that they've done, in my opinion, is a sequence. It's like a 5-parter called Search and Rescue. And it's the story. This is the one that I tend to believe. Like, I tend to believe this story is real. Like, I think a person on Reddit, like, wrote down real shit that happened to them as part of a search and rescue unit in a huge forest. And it's a 5-part. So he has lots of stories to tell, but it's just these collections of stories of this park guy who has seen some shit. I don't know if you've ever heard of, like, stairs that go nowhere, or, like, forest stairs. Like, there's these staircases that just appear in the depths of the forest that lead to nowhere and have all these strange happenings around them. Like, it sounds like real shit to me. And maybe I'm naive. I don't know. Maybe it is all made up. But the stories are so well done. And so if you want to try out, those are the three that I recommend. The first story, which I don't remember what it's called, but it's easy to find. It's the very first one, the very first episode. The Whistlers, and then Search and Rescue is a five-parter. But I listen to No Sleep every week, and I don't know why I don't subscribe, actually. Maybe just because the quality is so well done of the free episodes that I'm like, you know, there could be even better stuff out there that I'm not even listening to, because
I've never found one, though. I find it strange, because it's not the one that I thought I had just added to my list. I actually just tried to search them in iTunes, and they're not there, but now that you're telling me they offer, like, a subscription, mm-hmm. as in not just a, hey, hit the subscribe button on Podbean or in iTunes. I'm wondering, though, why they chose to do that. I'm wondering if it was so they could keep up with, like...
Yeah, from what I understand, the creator, David Cummings, he has basically quit his day job, and he just is a professional podcaster now because of subscriptions to the stories, and also they've started doing some advertisers. So, and even their advertisements are entertaining, because even if they do, like, a, you know, the typical podcast ads would be like Casper Mattress or Blue Apron.
Like you hear on ESPN Radio, basically.
Yeah, like they will even make up stories to promote their products that they're being paid to. So they don't do just like regular boring commercials. They do like No Sleep story commercials, which I think
that's
is
funny.
Pretty interesting. And like I said, their production quality is amazing. There's a guy named Brandon Boone who does their music, and it's always just like creepy and perfect for the story. And they actually are doing a tour right now. They're doing live shows across the country.
Oh, that's cool.
Which none of them came near me, so I was like really bummed out about that, because I would love to go to a live podcast with those guys. But check it out. It's if horror is your thing, I think you will really, really like it.
Cool. Well, I will say, since we're talking about downloads real quick, I just want to ask you, how much did you squeal when the guys from Slarmcast actually, like, listened to us and, like, responded to us? Like, I still have, because, you know, I told you I listened to an episode of theirs because I wanted to know. It was something you cared a lot about, and as your friend, I was like, okay, I want to check this out. And as someone that, like, I've listened to, like, one episode, I was still like, oh my God!
Well, like I said, I've talked to them on Twitter before, and I feel like, since I told them that we talked about them in the episode, one of the three of them was probably going to listen, at least to that part. And then definitely they were going to respond to your Cleveland hate.
Cleveland sucks.
Uh-huh.
I said, I don't know for sure. This is just going off of everything mm-hmm. that my husband and his other buddies from Chicago have always been like, Cleveland sucks. And I've heard other people make the jokes too. So maybe it's just because we're not from there and don't, you know, kind of like people hate on Southern Alabama, and we're like, well, it's not all great, but we're not like retarded down here, you know? Not, I hate that word, but I don't know what else to use right now. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not that we're like all dumb. Like, they just assume we're all dumb hillbillies. So I'm wondering
then,
if that's,
I mean,
like the same joke.
No, I've just never like heard it be a thing that Cleveland sucked at all. Like, I always heard the opposite.
Oh, growing up my entire life, that's all I've ever heard.
I don't know.
But then I'm the girl from Kentucky where
I was gonna say, it's
the whole
different.
Like, you don't wear shoes? Ha ha ha, you fit right in with a stereotype. And I'm like,
I wear shoes to the store and stuff, people. It's just like if I'm home or just checking the mailbox or going out to my car, I don't like shoes.
That's random.
Well, no, it's into the whole like, hey, you're from here, so it must be blah, blah, blah. You know, like, I just happen to kind of fit it.
Well, they're cool guys. I think that,
they seem really nice.
Yeah.
I think they're cool.
All right.
And their podcast is really well done.
Yeah. They had a really, really good episode this week too.
I might have to check.
I think you should. Even if you, I don't know, really would help if you were a Futurama fan, but, they do.
Well, I have watched it. It just wasn't something that I just like got way into.
So after the break, we're going to talk about our top five book/book series.
Is it series? Series. I don't know. I was doing that in the car when I was on my way from getting lunch. I was like, favorite series. Just series. I don't know.
Serialized books.
Yes.
So
more than one.
There is more than one book. So after the break, stick around and listen to us talk about our top five books.
Yes.
We'll return after these messages.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honors, Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And, of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
Now back to the show. On Nick.
Paperback Writer.
Sarah, madam, will you read my book? It took me years to write. Will you take a look
Welcome back to Geek and Sassy. Jennifer and Miranda, thanks for sticking around for our top five books / book series / serialized books, whatever we're calling it.
Series is.
And, you know, we're not going to, I mean, we will talk about these, obviously, but, you know, mostly it's not a review of the book. You know, it's just kind of like, this is why I liked it, and this is why it was important to me.
Because we want you to read them.
Yeah, I mean, we would definitely recommend anything that's on our top five list, but, you know, we're not going to break down the whole book for you, obviously. Also, and, you know, because time constraints and whatnot, but, so who wants to go first?
Well, I'll go first. Okay. And because I want to go ahead and address quickly that when Jenny and I sat down and decided that we were going to finally do this episode, because I've been after her for like three episodes to do this, we had lunch together and we didn't tell each other what our top five are, but we knew without a shadow of a doubt that both of us would want to talk about Harry Potter.
Yes.
So we have decided, given that we both would put Harry Potter in our top five, if not at number one of both of ours, somewhere in our top five for sure, the whole series, we've decided to leave that one off the table. In other words, like, it's amazing, it's great, we tell you guys that all the time, a lot of you share the same sentiment with us, therefore, as we go start at five and count down to one, you won't hear that one for that reason.
Yeah, it's kind of like a honorary number one just across the board, right. So... and, you know, our Harry Potter love has been well documented. So these are kind of, I guess technically you might call them two through six. But
right. I think this is one of those that goes without saying.
Pretty
but we
much.
Wanted, to, you know, we didn't want a lot of people being like, what? You've always said Harry Potter? Like,
yeah.
No, we're not going back on our word. We do still feel in agreement that that is probably our all-time till we die, favorite series.
Yes.
So we're going to move on to five through one in a different manner.
Gotcha.
So, okay. So I guess I'll go first.
Okay.
And I think I've mentioned this book before, so I definitely won't say a lot about it, but it's called The Grange House. It's by Sarah Blake. And it is one that I found randomly. My grandmother found it randomly in a dollar store, like Dollar General store. And she bought it because it was $2 hardback. And
wow.
The cover is beautiful. So she bought it and she had laid it down to go to work one day. And I was homesick because this is like the end of high school, beginning of college. And I picked it up and I got to like chapter 10 or 12 before I fell asleep because I was sick. She comes home and grabs the book and starts reading again. I wake up and I'm like, what are you doing? So she went back to Dollar General, bought a second copy. Read it once, loved it. But then we started talking about it and she's like, well, what about? And I'm like, I don't, what? And then I would say, what about? So we both reread it. So this is a book that I read three times to really, truly appreciate the works that, and the read that Sarah Blake has created. So it's really awesome. And she is known. She wrote the book The Postmistress that I know we have some friends that really enjoyed it. But it's a historical novel that's got a lot of suspense. And there's some romance. And it's set in 1896 when the young lady turned 17. So, obviously, when you're 17 in 1896, like, they're wanting to marry you off. And
right.
Like so, you kind of have to to read it, you know, at first, because I was, like, 18, 19 at the time, and I'm, like, appalled at parts of it. I think you need to, like, imagine she's, like, 24-ish. Because, really, at 17 in 1896, you were practically 24.
So. Yeah.
I think if you... And there's not so much romance that as a dude or even a woman that doesn't care for romance, you wouldn't want to read this. So I would suggest it. I have never checked.
I assume you could just order it off Amazon or somewhere, but I mean, I doubt your Dollar General is going to have it anymore. I bought that in like.
It wouldn't that be amazing?
That would be really funny, but yeah, we bought it in like 03. So it's an amazing read, and I don't remember exactly now, but I remember it really grasping me and really catching me. Mm-hmm. So that's why it is in my top five, because I've read it, like I said, I read it the three times initially, almost back to back, so that we would, you know, do the, oh yeah. And there's a murder / mystery sense to it. So even if you just read it for that, if you were into mystery and suspense.
Awesome.
I loved it.
Well, my number five is also kind of has a little bit of a historical vibe. It's called Summer of My German Soldier, written by Betty Green in 1973. And I was trying to remember how old I was when I read this book. I feel like I was a little bit older than the main character, who was 12. I feel like I was maybe 14 or 15 when I first read this, but I honestly don't remember how I read it, when I read it. I just remember I read it a bunch of times, and I love it. It's set in Jenkinsville, Arkansas, during World War II, and there's a 12-year-old Jewish girl, which is odd to find in a southern-type area.
Yeah.
So they're kind of like the only Jewish family in the town, and in their town, well, outside of their town, there is a German prisoner of war camp. And it's a huge deal. I mean, obviously, the war is ongoing during this story. And there's also the issue of, how African Americans are treated in the South during this time as well.
Oh, yeah.
So there's the little girl's name is Patty Bergen. And she's just a terrible... in a terrible circumstance, meaning she's the black sheep in her family. She's the ugly duckling. She has an overbearing mother and father who just cannot relate to this person. She has a younger sister who is seemingly perfect in every way. She has just all of these insecurities, and she's frankly emotionally abused most of the book and a little bit physically abused by her father. They're just terrible to her. My heart just breaks for this little girl. She's just so wrapped up in all of these insecurities, and she just wants to be loved and accepted by her parents. And her mother is just one of these kind of spoiled princess type beauty queens. Like this daughter of hers is not what she wanted in a daughter. You know what I mean? She's not charming or sophisticated. She's not beautiful or good with the boys, as the mom puts it. And just a typical, just a disappointment to her father. But the one source of love that she does find is with her African American nanny housekeeper, who named Ruth, who just adores her and is the only person that can see Patty for a worthwhile human being. And they have a very sweet and special relationship. It's the only bright spot in the book. But eventually, one of the German soldiers from the POW camp escapes and comes across Patty. And Patty hides him in one of the, garages at her parents' house, above the garage in, an attic-type space. And so she begins a relationship with this person named Anton, who, you know, she's Jewish and he's a Nazi, but he's not a Nazi. You know, he just went to war for Germany because he's German, and he just wants to go home to his family. So they start a relationship, not a sexual relationship, but just an emotional one, because
a friendship,
because she's just dying for somebody to understand her, and he does. And it's such a sweet story. It's also very tragic, and I don't know if it was just that age that I was when I read it, but it's just a very complex and heartfelt novel. It has a sequel that is also really good called Morning is a Long Time Coming, which I also really enjoy. So, and it ran some awards. It was like Book of the Year, and it was an ALA notable book in its time. So, that's my number five.
I had actually never heard of that book.
It's really great.
That's cool to see something different. So my number four is where I get into my series
of many.
Yes. So I chose, and I almost didn't put this on my list. I almost put it in my honorable mentions, but there was something about it that kept going, no, I deserve to be there. And it's a newer, sorry. It's like, what am I doing again? Oh, yes, I'm talking about this book.
You're podcasting, Miranda.
Yes, I'm podcasting. Mm-hmm. So it's a newer series. Like, number one came out in, I want to say 2011, maybe? Or around that time, 2010, 2011. And it's the All Souls trilogy by Deborah Harkness, which book one is A Discovery of Witches. And it has won multiple literary awards. It was a Goodreads Choice nomination for Best Paranormal, which I don't know that I'd classify it as paranormal. I'd say suspense, paranormal, historical, and fantasy altogether.
Okay.
It's basically about a centuries-old vampire and this witch and a manuscript. There's a manuscript that talks about how demons and witches and vampires and how they all came to be. And it's actually made, the way it's made is kind of, like the book itself, it's kind of grotesque, because I want to say at one point they say it's maybe covered in, like, it was the skin of
human skins.
No, it wasn't a human skin, because remember, they're demons and witches. Yeah. And so it was either like a wolf or a vampire's skin, like they were their skin to make this book. So it looks like it's leather, but it's not.
Nice.
Right, and she, the main character is this, she's a witch, but she's this scholar at Oxford, and she does a lot of research, and so it involves, there's a lot of history, deep history, and it talks about the Bodleian Library a lot, and they actually at some point start, they do, I will say, just go back into time. And it talks about the architecture that she's seeing, because she's actually there. Like, when it's, like, you know, because she's back in time, she's actually seeing it for real. And as the scholar that she is, and with her job that she has, she's just fascinated by this. And in a way, because there is a lot of romance that goes into these books, but not so much that she'd be like, I can't read that. But she kind of doesn't – it's not one of those, like, tropes where it's like she needs the man. Like, she talks about how much she doesn't want to want him. Mm-hmm. But she does. And he's a vampire, and he's a geneticist.
Oh, cool.
So they're very intelligent – they're both very intelligent characters. And the historical stuff in it, I don't know. It's just very well written, very well done. I don't know. People have made comments about how it has tinges of Anne Rice, and as much as people hated to say it, they saw tiny sparks of Twilight, and I'm thinking only because he's a vampire, and she's, like, I know that Kristen Stewart's character, which that's the movie, but I know Bella wasn't a witch, but I think they're talking about how it's, like, the whole, will they, won't they, but he's a vampire, and she talks about, like, well, he's technically this old, and, you know. She's not a young kid, though. She's not a teenager. She's an adult, you know, a full adult, so.
Well, I think that any story that has any kind of connotations like that are going to be get those comparisons when it might be unfair.
It's very frustrating. But the lady that wrote the book, Deborah Harkness, she, I want to say, is a historian or is very well versed in history and histological events and time period. So everything in it that's – she says this, and I don't want to get it wrong, but a lot of the things that they talk about, like the time, like it would line up perfectly. It's like she did it correctly.
Okay.
Like the historical part is well done, especially if you're one of those people that you read this and you're like, no. Yeah. They would not be in this part of the world or the country during this time because this was happening. There's no way. No, like it's well done. And she even talks about, you know, well, we have to be careful because right now this is going on and this is going on and we That's can't get caught up in that. And so it's I don't know. I read book one thinking, okay, witches, vampire school, and then got so much more out of this entire series that I've reread number one, and it led me to find other books because it was like, if you read this, mm-hmm. you should try this.
How many books are in this series?
There's three, and then there's a – I want to say it's called a visual companion. Like it's a history book.
Okay.
That she's written to go along with the series, but it's not a novel. Like there's pictures and just all kinds of different stuff. And it's very interesting. It's really cool. Really, really good series that I would recommend to anybody.
Well, my number four kind of starts I guess I was kind of unknowing how much I love dystopian type stories. Which most of the rest of my list has an element of dystopia to it. So I'm like, apparently I really enjoy that genre. And so my number four is not as heavy into that. It just is sort of a background element. But it's Ready Player One by Ernest Cline.
Yes.
And like you said, that's a newer book too, published in 2011. And have you read Ready Player One?
I have.
I know it's hugely popular, so there's, you know, I don't have to say a whole lot about it and why I like it, but it's this amazing combination of nostalgia and also futuristic, you know, that hard science fiction, but also all of this amazing 70s, 80s trivia and knowledge that Ernest Cline just has. Like, Ernest is this main character. I've listened to him on various podcasts, one recently, and he's just an amazing person, like, fascinating, his wealth of knowledge. And he just puts it all together in this wonderful story. And I know it probably appealed to you a lot because you're a person who plays games. And the main character, Wade Watts, is, you know, highly involved in gaming and VR, virtual reality.
Right.
And, you know, so I don't really need to set up the plot or mutt or anything really like that. But it's set in the future, but it also has all these great past references, which I think is what makes it so unique and special. And like you said, it has a little bit of a love story in there, a little bit of political intrigue. He draws all these parallels between, like, the inventors of Oasis, the virtual reality world, and maybe like Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, their kind of relationship. I think he kind of drew from that a little bit. And it's going to be a movie directed by Steven Spielberg, and mm-hmm. I think it's going to be amazing. I think that the characters are so well done and distinct and interesting, and I would actually love a sequel to this book.
I could definitely see where they could do a sequel. It would be very possible.
Yes.
But it would also be just fine if they did. Like, of course, I'm like you. I would love a second book. Yeah. But this is one of those, like, if they didn't, it's okay.
It's still
but
great. They could. By itself. It truly is great. It maybe it would kind of mess it up for me because it. I do like that uniqueness that it has. That mix of genres that it has, and it's really funny and action packed too. It's just so great. I love it.
It's a very good book. I agree with you on that one.
What you got for number three?
So number three is another series, and I just want to keep saying series is because now it's funny. But number three is a series that I have talked about before, because I mentioned the Lifetime movies that they've now turned them into. So mine is the Aurora Tea Garden series by Charlene Harris.
Oh, okay.
That I absolutely love. And on the Lifetime movies, Aurora is played by Candace Cameron Bure, which I will say, of all the things I thought in my head, she fits the closest to what they could ever possibly put on, like, make in real life.
Well, that's high praise.
So the basic concept of this series, they're crime novels. There are nine because she stopped at eight in 2003 and then came out last year. And I think that's why I talked about this. So it came out last year. She added another one. And it kind of all starts and revolves around Aurora Tea Garden, obviously, who is called Ro. Mm-hmm. When the first book comes out, she's 28. And I want to say when I first started reading them, because the first one did come out in the 90s, but I didn't read them until I was probably 27, 28. So I was like, oh, this is cool. And she's a librarian. Like, that's her profession. She's
you tend to really like those librarian stories.
I do. And I love mystery, murder, mayhem, things like that. And it starts, you know, she actually is part of this club that's called the Real Murders Club. And they meet every month and they study a famous kind of baffling or maybe not even well-known unsolved crime. And each month a different one presents their crime and their story. And then they talk about who they think done it and their theories. And it's really neat. And if it weren't for her being in that club, some of the things that happen in book one that take you on to 2, 3, 4, 5 and so on would never happen. So it's very interesting. And like I said, they've now turned it into a Lifetime movie series where they have agreed they are continuing this. So far they have done book 1 through 4, which if you watch the Lifetime movies, they actually did book 2 before book 1.
Weird.
And that was something that they did in agreement with Charlene Harris because they wanted to introduce this city, this world that she had built, these characters, in a way that people would, I don't know, respond better, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So book 2 is movie 1, and then it goes 1, 3, 4.
That's odd.
But it, you know what? I was really against it at first, but then when it came out, the way they did it, they did have to make some changes as far as like the age of her, like her one best friend is supposed to be older than her. And she's not. And then her little brother is supposed to be a big part of, like, her dad's remarried and has a son. Her little brother is supposed to be a really big part. And they've not talked about him at all. Like, I'm thinking he maybe doesn't even exist in the TV world.
Ah, okay.
They're really cool. They're based in a small town in Georgia. So it's kind of, you know, local to the area. They talk – she goes to Atlanta a lot, you know, because Atlanta is like the big city. So if you want something, you got to go to Atlanta. You know how we're like, if you want something, you got to go to Panama City or Montgomery or, you know. Well, so she does that a lot. Like they got to go to Atlanta. I said Lifetime. It's Hallmark.
Hallmark, yeah.
Hallmark, not Lifetime. which they're kind of the same.
Same diff, yeah.
Right, same concept, different channel. But she is just this all around, like, everybody loves her. She's supposed to be this petite, like, tiny librarian. And, you know, I don't know. I felt, you know how we've talked about before, well, who you like this character and it's probably we like them because you tend to gravitate towards them due to your likes and dislikes. And I think that's what sold me and got me further into this, or, like, got me where it's on my list, obviously.
Obviously.
Because of how, I don't know, I saw a lot of similarities in myself and Aurora. Other than the fact of she's 4'11", and I'm like...
6'11".
Almost. I'll just admit it. I'll admit it. I'm like 5'10", guys. 5'9", 5'10".
Sasquatch.
Yeah, but so that was the only thing where I was like, well, I don't understand that, because I'm not sure, but... But I did. I love this series a lot, and I was really pleased that they adapted it to TV film, TV movie.
Well,
I would have liked to see movie, but I don't know if it would have done what it needed to do to go on and make more.
Well, it's interesting we both have in our number three slot something that was adapted, because, and I know you've read this, and probably a lot of our listeners have read this, but my number three series is The Hunger Games.
Yes!
From Suzanne Collins. Like I said, if you've not read the books, you've probably seen the movies. Hugely popular. And for the most part, really well done. And true to the source material, I would say. Uh-huh. In a very, like, pleasing way. I'm not as big a fan as them splitting up that last movie into two parts, but...
No, I wasn't a big fan of that either.
But, I mean, that's pretty minor in what's otherwise just a super well-done adaptation of the book series. I love The Hunger Games because I was not expecting it. Like, in my love of dystopia, I don't know why I wasn't expecting it, but I had my cousin's wife lend it to me, and, you know, I really didn't think much about it. It was before it really blew up, and, you know, I was like, yeah, I'll read this, and boy, it just got me right at the beginning. There's something so engrossing about Katniss to me as a character. She's not your typical female character. I never felt like she was... she's not like anybody I've ever read before. She has, even as tough as she is, as smart as she is, and the things that she does, the sacrifices that she makes, she still has this air of fragility to her that makes her very relatable. She's not like a person that you can't identify with. And even
I would agree.
Even though, obviously, I've not found myself in a Hunger Games situation. Not yet, but it is early. It is early in the Trump presidency. But, yeah, we're not there yet.
Sorry.
But...
Oh, God.
You know, I think that everybody can relate to Katniss. And the way that they did the quote-unquote love triangle with her, I always... I feel like it was real life. Like, it felt like it's not
That's like, it was a real life situation.
Right, maybe. It felt like a real life thing that could for real happen to a person.
Right.
And that in the end, she made the decision that I think was probably right for her, even though most of the time I wanted her to go the other way. You know what I'm saying?
Sorry. It's in my water.
But just a fantastic, just idea, the way it's written so descriptively. She just really, Suzanne Collins just really puts you in the arena, and the action's so great, and so many memorable characters. Just a fantastic series all around.
I would agree with that completely.
All right.
So, following on the dystopian theme, because we're at number two. Wow, we're at number
two. We are. Yeah, we're doing good.
My number two is a series by Kim Harrison, which it's kind of dystopian, but it's kind of modern day. Like, there's some tropes in there mm-hmm. where things are different, but it's not, like, full-blown end-of-the-world apocalypse. Mm-hmm. I just would associate it with some of the tropes in a dystopian series is okay. why I'm saying okay. that. For the most part, it's all modern day. Right now, it's a series of 13 novels,
wow.
8 short stories, and 2 graphic novels.
Wow.
And also 1 compendium.
What's it called?
It's the Hollow series, also known as Rachel Morgan series.
Okay.
It's by Kim Harrison, published by HarperCollins. And it's an urban fantasy alternate history. So the alternate history part is kind of where I said sort of dystopian.
Okay.
Because it is the end of days for a certain group of, I guess we'll say, people. And what I loved, what originally attracted me to this story is, this is when, like, MySpace was still really big. And because I read, oh yeah, I'm sorry, it was. But it's when MySpace was really big, and because I was a big reader, it would pop up book recommendations down in the corner. Uh-huh. And it actually recommended book number 2 for me. And I didn't know it was book number 2. And I will say, picking it up, because it's when we also first kind of moved to the area down here, and I read a lot of books because I didn't really know anybody. Mm-hmm. So I went and I picked up book 2, but I was okay. Like, there were parts where I was like, oh, I wish they'd tell me more about that, because here I'm thinking it's book 1, you know? I wish they'd tell me more about that. And then when I finished and found out it was book 1, I was like, well, crap. So I did go back and read book 1 before I moved on. But I got really engrossed when reading book 2 because it's set, like, right on the line of Kentucky and Ohio. So for me, growing up in Kentucky, there are a lot of things that they would talk about that I was very familiar with. Mm-hmm. Of course, when you find familiarity in something, you want to, you know, go further in.
Right.
So it's right – a lot of it is in the city of Cincinnati, which is in Ohio, but then there's, like – chunks of, like, where they live is actually mm-hmm. across the line is technically in Kentucky.
Right.
So this history is built upon 2 premises. The recent open existence of magical and supernatural species, because they were there. They've always been there. But people didn't know they were there.
Ah.
So they primarily talk about witches, werewolves, vampires within the human population. And basically the historical change is that the Cold War, during that time, the Cold War military, they spent time in genetic engineering as opposed to, like, the space race.
Ah.
And it resulted in an accidental release of this genetically modified tomato in the 1960s.
Okay. Well,
okay, so the problem is because of how they genetically modified, because we genetically modify foods and fruits and stuff mm-hmm. all the time, but mm-hmm. because of how it was done, it killed a huge portion of the human population, but not, and they were like, well, why aren't these other people getting sick? Like, why aren't they dying?
So it was a killer tomato?
Kind of. You might call it a killer tomatoes. Yeah. It's not so funny. But yeah. But the problem is that now the series is set 40 years after this plague, so to speak, has happened, and they refer to it as the Turn. That's what they talk about in the series. It's referred to as the Turn.
Gotcha.
Because before then, 40 years before, like, before this happened, nobody actually knew that witches and vampires and werewolves were a real thing.
Okay.
It was a story. It was a legend. Mm-hmm. There's even fairies and all kinds of things. And now because of the Turn, the tomato, they didn't die. they didn't die. None of them did.
Okay. Okay.
And the whole series is told in first person from Rachel Morgan, that's why it has 2 names, the Hollow series, the Rachel Morgan series.
Gotcha.
The author is the one that calls it the Hollow series, but she embraces Rachel Morgan series because that's what her fans were calling it. And she is a detective bounty hunter witch. And she works with law enforcement agencies and helps them face threats from, you know, regular everyday people. That's the whole bounty hunter, mm-hmm. bounty hunter part of her. And even the supernatural. And this focuses on, like, her relationships with partners, you know, of hers. The fact that she lives with a vampire who is bisexual and a pixie.
Nice.
And the pixie is hysterical. Like, he's this tiny, like, he's supposed to only be, like, 6 inches tall, maybe a little bit more. And he's got, like, 30 kids, you know, because that's how pixies roll. And he is flipping hysterical. And it also talks about her male relationships. And not all her male relationships are with witches. Like, you would think if she's a witch, she would date other witches. But no, there's some vampire action and some
nice.
Werewolf action. And it's pretty, pretty interesting. And I continued the series because, like I said, the familiarity with the location, the fact that that's just something I've always been drawn to, were
supernatural type,
almost supernatural. And I mean, she's kick ass.
Awesome.
Like, she's one of those, like, she doesn't need a man to take care of her. She doesn't need, I'm not saying I don't need my husband to take care of me, but you know what I'm saying? Like, she's one of those that she can do it on her own. And she's willing to have help, but she doesn't have to have your help.
Gotcha.
And when she does need help, she will say, I need help.
Awesome.
So it's really interesting. And like I said, you would have to, like, look up the whole list. But it's, I mean, she's still writing. I think there's another one that's supposed to come out pretty soon. Because I was trying to look at the Wikipedia list.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even see the one that's, like, real coming out soon. So it's not even been updated.
All right.
There's a lot.
All right. So my number two, and I know of maybe, like, a handful of other people that have actually read this book / like this book. And my accent's going to make it sound funny, but it's Cell, which I want to say it by, like, Sale. But it's Cell, C-E-L-L, by Stephen King. It's my favorite Stephen King book, which says a lot.
That's not one I've read or actually even heard of.
Yeah, I don't think that a lot of people do like it. But there is something about this book that the first time I read it stuck in my brain. And I've been obsessed with this book ever since. I've probably read it like 20 times. And it has a bit of that, not dystopian, but apocalyptic feel to it. Because in the main character is a graphic artist named Clayton Riddle, and he's in Boston. He's just got a book deal, and people start getting calls on their cell phones, and then they start going insane. So they're...
Oh, I have heard of that one.
It actually is a movie.
Right, that's why I heard of it.
Yeah, and people, it's called The Pulse, is what makes everybody crazy, and you never get any explanation of really who has done this and why, which is something that Stephen King has done before that I tend to enjoy. The unanswered questions, I don't know why. Usually that drives me crazy, but in something like this,
well.
Yeah. I just love it. Stephen King is just unparalleled. I have a bookcase of Stephen King, and Cell is my absolute favorite. So he's stuck in Boston for a little bit. Because everybody, when they get the pulse on their phones, they just go nuts. They basically turn into zombies. They kill each other. they hunt down, and it's just mass chaos.
So it's like a different twist to the zombie apocalypse. Yeah. It's not a virus this time. No. It's an electronic pulse.
Yeah, it's basically a twist on it.
Okay.
And I love the main character. He's trying to get back home to his son and to his ex-wife. He knows his little boy has a cell phone. He knows, you know, so he's worried about him. He's trying to get back. He meets up with some more survivors along the way, becomes friends with them. There's this whole other Stephen King element to it that there's some telepathy involved and just very, I could just say Stephen King-y things that happen. And it's set up in Maine, like a lot of his books are. Like, they're trying to get back to Maine from Boston. So it's that whole region that just is his wheelhouse. And then they find a way to fight back a little bit, and then they also lose people along the way. There's a huge scene at the end, and then the ending is left very uncertain. You never find out what happened to the characters. And that's not giving away anything, but I will say that if that bothers you, you don't want to read this book. But everything in this book is just, I just love it. I just love everything about this book. The movie had so much potential, but was ultimately disappointing. But, I mean, they did manage to do a couple of good things in the book. But it just doesn't live up to the novel. And I know that most people on this planet...
I was going to say, well, very not say, few movies.
Yeah.
I've ever lived up the potential of their novel. Very few. There have been some good ones, but...
And very few people would name this book as their favorite Stephen King book, because things like The Dark Tower exists, and,
my favorite Stephen King book is not one that people are like, what? So...
All right. So, we are kind of running short on time, so we gotta wrap this thing up.
We can do it. My number one really doesn't need... explanation like the others have needed, because mm-hmm. if you've never heard of this book, then you kind of don't live on Earth. So my favorite book of probably all time, ever, hands down, would be Alice in Wonderland.
I knew you were going to say that.
Like I said, needs no explanation. Everybody knows what Alice in Wonderland is, but I just found so much solace in this book growing up. Maybe if I had grown up with, you know, because Jenny and I are, you know, older than the kids, they're like, mine's always Harry Potter. Well, it is, like mm-hmm. I said, but we grew up with a different set of books. And so that's why I related to Alice a lot, you know, how she was always curious about all kinds of things, mm-hmm. always had her nose in a book mm-hmm. and, you know, kind of preferred to be friends with her cat Dinah and her books right. than to listen to her studies and be with anyone else. And the whole, like, going into this world in your mind or whatever you feel it was for Alice was kind of comforting for me. It was very a place to go when good things happened or bad things happened to me growing up. And it was just where I could go. And I knew I could be in that world that Lewis Carroll had created and everything was okay.
I love that. That's a great reason to be attached to a book.
I feel like it is. I like it. I really do.
It is great. I remember reading it, and it has that bit of just total weirdness to it that I think,
right.
I think we both kind of enjoy.
Which has kind of molded my taste.
Right. I was just thinking that.
As an adult. And you know, usually a take on Alice, I don't care how out there it is, I will watch it or read it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, even if it's just, like, based on parts of, you know, it's not actually a retelling of Alice in Wonderland. It's just, you know, based on this or based on that. I really enjoy those, and I think it's because of how I felt so strongly about the actual Alice in Wonderland and the adventures of Alice in Wonderland.
I think that's awesome. And I think that my number one book is one of those that nobody else is probably all that aware of. But it is a book called Dragon Tears by Jean Koontz.
Yes.
This was the beginning of my Jean Koontz love. I was in seventh grade when I first read Dragon Tears, which I think is probably a little young to start on something like this.
Nah, meh.
No?
No, because I read Stephen King way younger than that, so.
That's true. But Dragon Tears is, it's a little bit dated. I mean, it's from the early 90s, but I actually just bought another copy of it, and I was reading, because my copy is just dog-eared, and just, I mean, because I've read it 20 times, maybe.
That's not a bad thing.
I know, it's just, but I bought a new copy, and I was like, I need to read this again. It follows the story of a cop named Harry and his partner named Connie. They're cops in L.A. and they have a bad day. They have a situation where they have to kind of thwart a public shooting in a restaurant. Okay. And they come across somebody who has a little bit of a paranormal ability. And his ability is to be able to stop time. He can just pause reality. And he uses his ability to just basically fuck with people. And to get whatever he wants. He developed this ability when he was young, and has since then, you know, walked into banks and got all their money, and that's not fun anymore. You know, he's done all of these things that you would do if you had this ability, so he's kind of bored with that aspect. Okay. He can have anything he wants at any time that he wants. There's no one that can just take anything from him, and so he finds this delight in playing with people. And using them for just sadistic purposes. He's very powerful, and he comes across Harry and Connie and just decides to add them to this cast of characters that he's been fucking with, basically. But he meets his match with these two, and it's just wall-to-wall action, just kind of like a perfect story, in my opinion. Dean Koontz is an amazing writer. The last several years, I have not enjoyed his stuff. I just prefer his classics. I have just a whole bookshelf of nothing but Dean Koontz. And this story, I don't know if it's just because it was my first or what, but whenever I think, what's my favorite book? It's always Dragon Tears. And just, if you haven't read it, just go read it. I promise. It's awesome.
That's good. Because you told me about it a couple weeks ago. So I had added it to my list to read. Of course, I love Dean Koontz. So
he's awesome. I know it's going to be good. Of course, Dean, I don't know if you know anything about Dean Koontz. You know that dogs play a huge part in a lot of his books, and there's a great dog character. He writes from the dog's point of view, and that sounds weird, but it actually adds so much to the story.
No, there's another book he wrote that I'll send you because I can't remember the name, and I read it right after we lost our golden retriever, which you know he loves golden retrievers. It's his favorite.
Yeah,
and I cried through and snot cried. Like hard snot cried through like the whole book.
Is it Watchers?
No.
Because that is another amazing book with dog in it.
This one is, like, pretty much all about, like, the dog, I think, okay. If I remember correctly.
So anyway, that's our top five. Do you want to just say them again real quick?
So at number five, I had Grange House by Sarah Blake.
Number four is the All Souls Trilogy by Deborah Harkness. Number three, the Aurora Tea Garden series by Charlene Harris. Number two, the Hollow series, also known as Rachel Morgan series by Kim Harrison. And, of course, number one was Alice in Wonderland.
And I had number five, Summer of My German Soldier by Betty Green. Number four, Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. Number three, The Hunger Games by Suzanne Collins. Number two, Sill by Stephen King. And number one, Dragon Tears by Dean Koontz.
Do you have a super quick honorable mentions list that's
Gosh, yeah. I'm just going to say them and
Just run down them.
Running out of time here, but The Fireman by Joe Hill, Desert Places by Blake Crouch, and Will Grayson by John Green.
Oh, my honorable mention list. I feel like I had a problem. So mine's Arcana Chronicles by Kresley Cole, Blood of Eden series by Julie Kagawa, The Iron Fae series also by Julie Kagawa, White Trash Zombie, which is a series by Diana Rowland, Murder Complex series by Lindsay Cummings, Selection series by Kira Cass, Throne of Glass series by Sarah J. Moss, Stacey Justice books by the one and only Barbara Nino, which we did interview, Anything by Neil Gaiman, and the Morganville Vampires series by Rachel Caine.
All right.
It was a hard time. Awesome.
I narrowed down way more than you did.
Okay, so Jenny really has to go. We both have kids to pick up from school, and she has to be there quicker. So sorry if my nerd eye candy is not as funny as normal. I'll just do it super quick. We normally segue. Yeah, don't have time. So nerd eye candy of the moment.
Yay!
Okay. So because Beauty and the Beast is coming out and the stuff is plastered everywhere and I've watched every preview and every interview and anything that is going on because I'm super excited about the live action Beauty and the Beast, I was reminded for my love of Dan Stevens, who was on Downton Abbey, and he's going to play the Beast.
Okay.
The man is gorgeous. He has an accent. And his eyes are like staring into his soul. I swear. I apparently have a thing for the British accent.
Yes. Well, yes. I can see
that.
Yeah,
but he's fantastic. So I'm waiting to see how he is as the Beast. Because, you know, he's like this CGI/costume Beast for most of the movie. So I'm hoping I get to see beautifulness at some point. Because he's got like that, like, beautiful porcelain man skin and
man skin.
Well, you can't call it beautiful porcelain skin. That's what you say about like women and be like, oh, you have such great skin. No, he has like, he's
good
pretty.
Choice.
Thank you. And your choice?
My choice is somebody I talked about a little earlier. It is Rip Hunter.
What?
From Legends of Tomorrow. I'm digging everything about Rip Hunter. Even the crazy doesn't know what's happening version of him is hilarious, and he does an amazing American accent somehow. And
that baffles me.
And no, he's so good.
I'm okay
good.
With it.
But his name's Arthur Darville. Yeah, that's his real name. I was almost called him Rory, but anyway.
I call him Rory all the time. It's okay.
But he is just really working for me. On Legends, that haircut is just, it's
I like
real good on him.
Kind of, yeah.
Real good. And I am ready to get my real Rip back, though. I like this version, the evil version, but I need my real Rip to come back.
And dear CW, I'm sure Jenny would appreciate you putting Rip on a salmon ladder. I'm just saying.
Oh my God, yes. Yeah. And on that note,
on that note, please follow us on all the Instagrams, the Twitters, and now on ask.fm/geekandsassy, you can ask us an anonymous question, and we will start taking questions, and you don't have to worry about putting them on Twitter if you want to be anonymous.
Oh, that is smart. Jenny Cruz, CRUZ2814.
And I am always at Mom's a Nerd, and we are both together at Geek and Sassy.
Thank you for listening to episode number 10, and listen to some of our buddies here on Place to Be Nation. There's so much. We have so much awesome stuff.
So much. I mean,
the Dadcast, JT is doing just a great job over there. Sellers Points, you know, Russell and Kelly, they know what they're talking about. They have a great new segment called Speculator's Corner. It's really good. The Hard Traveling Fanboys, always fun with them, and they always make my list. And Todd Weber, of course. So just listen, follow, subscribe, rate, review. Just give us some feedback. Let us know what you like and what you don't.
Thumbs up, thumbs down. We're not mad.
But thanks again for listening, and we will see you next time.
See you next time.
Bye.
And as my good friends say, you're welcome for talking.